Hey, 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 closet busters and bold move makers. It is time once again for Life Uncloset. So I want you to gather around because it is time once again to kick down those closet doors of your life. We're here to escape our BS, explore our fears, and elevate our self-expression. I'm your host, Rick Clemons. I'm the bold move expert and that coming out guy who's going to take you to the party, the pulpit, the wake, and back to the party of living your life uncloset. So come on along with me and grab hold of yourself and get ready to step out, step up, and step into facing your fears, making your bold moves, and living life without apologies. Now let's get to the show. Hello, Life Uncloseted family. Have you ever thought, oh my gosh, this challenge is ahead of me, or this thing I got to do is right ahead of me, and the only way out is through it? All of us have thought that, right? I just got to go through it. Just got to get through it. Let's just get it done. Let's go out and go through it, right? And then things like our big coming out journeys, or maybe the decision to walk away from a relationship, could be changing jobs. It could be like deciding to, you know, between you and your partner to have a child. What I love is sometimes it isn't the only way out is through, but I'm not going to spoil what our guest is going to talk about. She is an author. She's a book coach. She has written a book that is just come out. I'm not going to say the name of the book. I'm going to give her all the glory to talk about her book in her own way. And she actually found a way in midlife to make a big leap in her own world that, well, in her own way, the only way out was through it. Her name is Suzette Mullen, and I'm very excited and blessed to have her here to talk about her life, her journey, and her new book. So Suzette, welcome to Life Uncloseted. I am truly thrilled and honored that you're here.
Thank you so much, Rick. I'm really excited to have the chance to talk to you about my book and about my life.
Well, I love this because sometimes it's just the excitement of having somebody here and knowing that they're going to give a different perspective on things, that they're going to take, you know, something that they love doing, which, you know, book coaching and all this sort of stuff. And then you put it into your own essays and everything that you've written for different various organizations, New York Times and all that sort of stuff, today.com. And then you wrap it up in a beautiful book, but it has a twist. So let's kind of talk about what brought you to the book first. Like, why this book? I mean, I know as an author, it's inside me, it's got to escape sort of thing. But why this book for you, Suzette?
Yes. So is it okay if I say the title now, Rick?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's yours now. I want you to take the glory for it, because I love that it's a twist on the title, that the words that I've been saying. So go for it.
Yes. Yes. So my memoir is called The Only Way Through Is Out, which is a bit of a twist on the phrase that many of us are familiar with. The only way out is through. And so my memoir is both a coming out and a coming of age story, a midlife coming out and coming of age story. And how I came to write it was I had an experience of a midlife revelation about my sexuality, and that set in motion a whole series of events and decisions that I had to make. I had, when this revelation occurred, I was in a long-term marriage to a man. I had two young adult sons. I had a very, very nice life from, you know, all perspectives. And there was a lot of good in my life. And this thunderbolt struck me. And so as a writer and as a book coach, I wanted to make sense of what had happened to me. And I wanted to process it and first unpack it for myself and try to understand what got me to this place. And then as I wrote, I came to realize that my story would hopefully have meaning for other people, particularly people in the LGBTQ plus community, particularly people who are perhaps questioning their sexual identity or some form of their identity later in life. It doesn't have to be. My audience is not exclusively LGBTQ plus, because we all, well, many of us have an experience that shakes us to our core about who we are. And then we need to make a decision about what do we do about that.
Mm-hmm. similar story to mine. I mean, at 36, I finally decided, okay, can't live this. And the irony that most of my listeners already know is then 6 years later, I had a similar coming out about the work I did. I just didn't want to do it anymore. This wasn't who I was, wasn't anything that I was finding a lot of joy in. And I always find it interesting when I get to talk to people like you, where there's a similarity of, you know, like journeys and, you know, all this sort of stuff, that the unfolding of the other things that started to show up in addition to it, you know? So the book starts for you, you're writing it, you're a professional writer. So it's always interesting too, to get to talk to professional writers. But as you were moving through the journey of this book, were there other things that started to unfold for you that you're like, oh, didn't see that coming? I'm always curious if there is something like that that pops up for you.
Yeah. So one of the things that I've discovered, which was news to me, maybe it's not news to most people, but what was news to me is that when I stepped into my authenticity in my personal life, I was able to step into my authenticity more fully in my professional life. Mm-hmm. I'd had, you know, when you get to midlife and beyond, you've lived many lives personally and often professionally. And yep. I was an attorney. I was a stay-at-home mom. I was a community volunteer. I was a social justice advocate and all of those things. And all along, writing was part of who I was and part of what I did. But I really didn't claim my call as a writer until I was in my early 50s. So I claimed that call as a writer and began writing actually a different memoir, and also doing some freelance editing for other people. And after I had this midlife revelation about my sexuality and made some big changes in my personal life, I then really was able to step into my authenticity and be professionally as well. That was when I trained to become a book coach. And the interesting thing for me, Rick, is that I really was searching for many, many years about who am I? What am I? What was I put on this earth to do? And I felt that there was a thing that I was meant to do, but I could not seem to couldn't find it. It was like, you know, the proverbial oily pig that you're trying to wrap your arms around. And when I stepped into who I am personally, my true identity, it was like everything started opening up for me. And I launched my book coaching career. I really started running a business for the first time. And now every day I'm doing work that I love. I mean, I live in a small city and I go across the street to my co-working space every day with a little lunch bag. And I just spend my day working with writers and working with words. And I pack up at the end of the day and I come home and I'm just so happy. It's just like, I'm finally there. It took me a while, but I finally got there.
Well, and I think the finally getting there is also the journey. I mean, I've been out since 36. When I was 40, probably 42, 43 is when I quit working in corporate America and started my own business. And then even in that initial business of being a consultant, marketing, branding consultant, I still wasn't like completely like, oh yeah, this is who I want to be, right? But it was the easiest way to make the transition, like, hey, let's do this. This is what I know. I considered going back into the hospitality world. That was my, you know, my basis of everything. And I stayed in that world, even in consulting. I mean, a majority of my clients were consulting with hospitality software companies and doing marketing for them. And I still remember, Suzette, the day that I finally went to some of those clients, I kept one. I'm like, don't be stupid. Don't cut off all the income, right? But I went to them and said, hey, I'm going to pursue something different in my career. And I want to give you you know, I want to give you the heads up so that we can make a decision together of who I'd like to transition stuff to. Cause I had some people in my networks. I'm like, hey, this would be a good fit, right? I was shaking in my boots. I'm like, what are you doing? You know? But all that kept coming up for me is, Rick, if you can come out of the closet, you can do this too. You can do this too. Because there's so many things, as you just said, when you step into your true identity, you actually step into the full truth of your life in so many other ways. And even though it was scary, the energy behind my coming out is what actually fed my soul to go move forward again. And it sounds like this was a very similar experience for you. Like this is, your calling was there. It was just waiting for you to catch up to it, so to speak.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. Yeah. That's exactly how it feels. And, yeah. It feels so good to feel at ease in my life, aligned mm-hmm. with who I am, both personally and professionally.
So somebody that's going to read your book, why would you want them to read your book?
Great question. You should be a book coach, Rick. That's one of the questions that I ask my writers. So I'll put my book coaching hat on for 1 second and I will also answer your question. If I don't, please remind me that I didn't answer your question. When I work with writers, we go through a pretty intensive planning process at the start because I really want them to think deeply about their book. You know, why do they want to write this book in the first place? What have they come to the page to say? Who is the book for? And now I've gotten my book coaching hat on. I've forgotten your question. I've gone off on a tangent. What was your
That's
question?
That's okay. Well, Rick? Why should somebody want to read your book?
Oh, yes. Thank you. Why should someone want to read my book? And so we think about the reader and then we think about what's the takeaway for the reader? Exactly your question. Why, what do you want your reader to feel, think, or believe when they finish your book, when they, you know, close the covers? And sometimes that's a hard question to answer. Sometimes it's easy. And for me, at least at this point, now that the book is done and about to be in the world, it is a easy question for me to answer. Why someone should read my book is they should read my book to get hope and inspiration and encouragement on their journey. My readers, whether they're LGBTQ+ or they're straight people who are longing for something more or on the verge of making a big leap, they long to be authentic. I think we all do. We long for authenticity, however that looks like for ourselves. But there's a cost to authenticity. There certainly was in my case, when you're leaving an entire life and mm-hmm. stepping into a completely unknown future, and there's other people impacted. I mean, it wasn't just me. My journey impacted my family. It impacted my then husband and all of the things. So there is a cost to authenticity. And I think many of us, you know, we're weighing the pros and cons, you know, should I do this? Can I do this? Is it the right thing to do? And what I want to leave my readers with is that, at least with my story, is the cost of authenticity was worth it. And there's one more message I really want to leave with people, is that I think that many of us, even people that you and I would think are very young, but you know, they're in their 20s or their 30s, but they don't feel young because they're at the stage of life they're at. They think that once you've sort of set your course on whatever it is, whether it's a career or a relationship or, you know, your identity, is that it's too late to change course. That's how I felt. Mm-hmm. I felt that way in my late 20s when I was a corporate lawyer and I knew it wasn't the right thing for me, but I was like, I'd invested, you know, all this money and all this time and this training, and I just felt like I had to stay the course. And so I want readers to know that it's never too late. I mean, it's never too late to live out loud, to live authentically. It's never too late for a new beginning.
And I think that's a message that we hear a lot from a lot of people, like, it's never too late. It's never too late. But it's become such a flippant, just, we just regurgitate that, right? And as I was, you know, doing research and everything, learning more about you, I kept coming back to, this isn't just one of those flippant statements. And mostly because of the title of the book, the way you juxtaposition the title to something that most of the time, most of us say, the only way out is through, you know, it made me kept stopping and pausing, because it's like, what Suzette is laying down here is a way to stop and pause and think what just got said. And instead of always saying it's never too late, it's almost like to really say it's never too late. Now stop and really think about why you're letting it be too late. Because as soon as you let it, oh, it's too late, you've lost, quote, lost the battle. You know, I thought that for years. And, you know, I was 36, as I already indicated. And in so many ways, I thought it was too late.
Yeah.
Partially because I'd come out at 19 and then went back in the closet. And, you know, similar, but yet different to you, I'd been married at that point. I'd been married for 13 years. My little girls were just almost six and almost two. I thought it's too late. I've already laid the groundwork. Right. And then I've worked with many people like you who they were well further along. In fact, one of my most recent clients, he was 72. And, you know, in his journey, he waited until his wife passed away. She got terminal cancer. And he says, it's kind of a horrible thing to think about that I waited for her to die before I could be my truth. But he goes, it's also kind of horrible to say, okay, as soon as she dies, I get to be me, you know? Well, guess what? We all have our journeys and we come to this in our own ways. And I feel like that's what kind of an undertoning, or maybe the one of the big tones of your book is however you get here, it's the way you're supposed to, you know, the way through is this for you, plain and simple.
Yeah, exactly, Rick. I mean, I've had a number of people ask me if I regret not coming out sooner or, you know, any of that. And my answer is no. Right. I came out when I was ready to come out. When I look back on my life, and, you know, a lot of this is in the book, the unpacking of all of the denial, there were signs, there were opportunities to come out at many different places along the way. Yep. And for whatever reason, I wasn't ready. And I was ready in my mid-50s. And what you were saying about the gentleman that you worked with, who was in his 70s, who waited until his wife passed away, I think that's also a very common feeling that many of us who are coming to terms with our sexuality later in life experience. It's like, well, when this person is gone, you know, like for me early on, I thought, well, you know, I can't possibly do this while my mother is still alive. Like, how am I ever going to tell my mother? Right.
Right.
And then you start, and all these other people, and then you start really thinking about that. And you're like, am I going to wait until all these people are gone until I'm going to start living? And, right. and, you know, would I want that for anybody else? Mm-hmm. No.
But it's interesting, Suzette, too, to hear other people's perspective of when we do come out.
Oh, yeah.
And I used to get on my soapbox a lot on this. I don't get on my soapbox as much these days about it. If somebody pushes the button, yes, I'll go there. But I'm like, but here's the thing. Oh, you waited and, you know, you hurt some other people. I'm like, yep, I own that. I own that 100%. But let's take my 70-year-old. He lived through some of the most worst times about being LGBTQ. He knew who he was all through those times, in the 40s, in the 50s, in the 60s, in the 70s, where doing any of this, he lived through the AIDS epidemic.
Sure.
I lived through the AIDS epidemic. In fact, when I did come out, it was just starting. And that is one of the reasons I know that I either consciously or unconsciously went back in the closet. Now, there was other stuff. My family said, you can't be this. And there was a little bit of religious stuff going on there as well. But I see it, and many of my listeners know this because I've said this before, I see it as actually a blessing that I didn't come out then, because I don't think we'd be having this conversation. I was so young and so naive. I didn't really know anything about sex other than, you know, masturbation. That was probably about the extent of it at 19. I mean, people are like, really, you didn't have sex even at 19? I'm like, no, I just didn't. That wasn't, I mean, if you know you're kind of a gay guy, and even though you're dating girls, the last thing you're thinking about is, okay, let's go have sex, right?
Right, right.
So I had to mature into it. When I talk about coming out at 36, it's the same thing that you just said. I was ready. My maturity was there. Not only my maturity of who I was, but my essence of who I was, my presence of who I wanted to be in the world. The yearning was there to the point where I knew the yearning was not going to let me backtrack. The yearning was there at 19, but it wasn't mature and strong enough in itself to go, okay, I can weather the storm. Now, I would love to be growing up. Well, maybe not. Let me rephrase that. Okay. I would love to be growing up in this day and age where it's like so much more prevalent. There's other reasons I'm like, I'm so glad I'm not growing up in this day and age, because man, the attention for who you are and what you're supposed to be, it's a different attention than when we were growing up. Right.
Yeah.
But I think the beauty of, even again, I'm going to come back to the title of your book, is anyone who really takes the time to think about what you're saying, the only way through is out, applies to somebody growing up right now, having nothing to do with sexuality. The only way through is out when you're contemplating leaving a position at a career that everybody else looks at and goes, oh, look at you. You're so successful. Well, guess what? Those are messages that hold us hostage because we buy into them and we say, oh yeah, this is, yeah, if I do this, everybody's going to think I'm crazy. I no longer care that people think I'm crazy. I just don't care.
That's
to be me.
Yeah. That's one of the beauties of midlife and beyond. We care less about what people have to say. And yeah, I mean, all of what you've just said is so true. And I think that what, you know, come back to your earlier question about why would someone want to read this book, or what do I hope someone will take away from my book, The Only Way Through Is Out? It's that we, you know, I want people to see my story to hopefully give them permission to live their story. And wherever they are in their journey of whether it's coming out or whether it's making another big leap into an unknown future, it is scary for sure. I mean, you mentioned that, and especially when we're at midlife, or you know, I don't know about you, Rick, but I'm in my early 60s, and so midlife it gets really stretched out when you're in your early 60s. So you're like, I keep saying I'm in midlife, and you know, I don't expect I'm going to live into my 120s or whatever. But even you at 36, you had an established life. You had you had a spouse, and you had children, and you had a whole world that you had built. And you know, back to that cost of authenticity, there is a cost to authenticity, and there's also a cost to not being authentic. And any of your listeners here who have been in the closet, in any closet, and particularly I'd say in the LGBTQ+ closet, we know what that cost feels like of not being authentic. There is no, you know, there is no way through without some pain. I mean, there really isn't. I was searching for that, you know, third door when I was trying to figure out what I was supposed to do. And there was no third door. I mean, it was, you know, stay where I am and make peace with my life and try to live with this longing I had inside myself, or leave and cause other people pain and really jump into a completely unknown future, which was really scary for me.
Well, yeah. Anytime that we don't know where we're going, scary. I mean, we're humans. We want to know. We want to know. But one of the things I find powerful in what you just shared is I don't think people give enough credit due to putting ourselves in the place of being unspeakable about things. So it's the minute we don't speak about something, there's a whole lot of power we just gave to being unspeakable. And then that power resides deep within us. And then it tears us apart. It, you know, I remember the first time I admitted in a very interesting way, not 100% upfront, but as upfront as I felt like I could be to my wife, who was at that point my ex-wife by that point in time, that the exploring and cheating that I did during the entire marriage was way more than she probably knew. And to sit there and hear her say, I'm sure it was. It was almost like there was an understanding of, you know, okay, I kind of knew this was going on to begin with, but that unspeakable part of me took a huge sigh right then and there. It was like, okay, here's yet another thing. Because when we don't speak our truth, it's really, really painful, and it bottles up energy. In fact, one of the quotes that I say at the end of my talks when I'm on stage is, the truth of who you are is far more powerful than the false truth you're pretending to be. Because that truth gives you power. That truth is the essence of you. And when we give that truth fuel, we actually give ourselves confidence. We give ourselves love. We give ourselves self-care, all these different things. And I love that, you know, in some stuff I've read about your book, they use that term, unspeakable feelings. And those are dangerous. They are so dangerous. And I'm just assuming that the more you felt like you couldn't speak about something, the more it tore you up and made you uncomfortable. But yet we hold the course. This is what we got to do. But here it is.
Yeah. So I'm so glad you brought up unspeakable, because, I have a whole chapter. It's the second chapter in the book that's called The Unspeakable. And I describe being at an author's talk. This is, you know, way before I was writing my own book. Mm-hmm. And an author said at the talk that he felt called to write The Unspeakable. And how he defined it was, the things that that other people think about, but they're afraid to say out loud. And he, as a writer, felt like that was his calling, is to write The Unspeakable. And when I heard that, in that moment, I knew I had an unspeakable. And this was really before I had the revelation about my sexual identity, but I knew my unspeakable was these feelings I had for a long-term female best friend, and that was my unspeakable. And let's just say I'm speaking about it now.
And that's a journey in and of itself. I mean, that's exactly. Something really interesting when you step into that space where you're speaking and living out loud. There's a whole journey that starts. And that incident I was just talking about, where I, you know, said to my ex-wife, you know, there was way more than you probably know. It was because I was getting ready to be on national TV. And I had worked with the producers. I knew what I was coming on to do. And I'm like, but it's live TV. And you don't know, you trust that this is the things you're going to get asked. But I've been in that arena before. And I'm like, I always trust that somebody's going to decide to send you a zinger and be ready for it. Right. I was lucky that it didn't really come up, but I was prepared to answer that question. I was never going to tell an exact number of how many men I had been with during that time. But I always say it was more men than I deserve to be alive right now, because anything could have happened in those moments, you know. But I'm curious, for you, here we are, we're on, you know, the book is out and everything. What does it mean to you to truly live out loud at this stage of life?
Yeah, well, I think part of living out loud is doing the things that we feel called to do, even when they scare us. So you know, I think Brené Brown I'm a big Brené Brown fan. And, you know, she talks about brave isn't about not being afraid. Brave is about being afraid and doing it anyway. And so part, not all, but part of living out loud is is, you know, stepping into the arena, you know, again, channeling yep. Brené Brown, stepping into the arena. So certainly having this book coming out into the world, and it's telling a very vulnerable story. And there's a lot of, I mean, it's writing memoir. If you do it, if you really do it, it's a very vulnerable thing. So my life and my writing and my choices are going to be out in the world. And when this is airing, they will be out in the world.
Yep.
And I longed to feel alive. I longed to live out loud, and I feel like I'm finally doing that. So living out loud to me means opening my arms to what life is giving me in any given moment. I'm happily remarried now. I have a wife, and we have a little dog, and we just, you know, we're building, we built and we continue to build a very nice and new life for us. And she, you know, she was closeted for a very long time as well. She worked for she worked in higher ed, and she had an employer that was a religious employer, and she couldn't be herself. She couldn't be out. And so we both are on this, you know, later in life, living out loud journey together.
And it's such a beautiful realization when you realize there's beauty on the other side.
Yeah. Yeah.
And sometimes even right after it happens, it's hard to imagine that. I mean,
oh,
I know
sure.
Right afterwards it was such a big explosion, and you know, it had its moments where it calmed down really quickly and then it would come up again and then calm down really quickly. And I mean, it was a rocky road for quite a few years in my experience. But at the core of it was always like, because our kids were so young, it was always like, we're going to make this work for the kids no matter how it looks. Right. And then I met my husband about two and a half, three years after I came out. He wasn't the reason I came out. There was a different guy that was the reason. And that kind of calmed things down because there was a constant, you know, quote, other person there, not only for me, but for my kids and for my ex, where there was a grounding, like, okay, this truth is happening right now. Here we sit 22 years later, which is always interesting because people say, yeah, but what if I never get there? And I said, I understand and I hear you clearly, but just you saying that out loud is sending a message to the universe that you don't believe you can. And I'm going to invite you to believe you can. Not going to promise it, but I'm a big believer in what we put out is what we get back. And sometimes I think as we go through these journeys, and again, it's another version of the only way through is out, is if the only way through is believing it can't happen, then guess what? You're out is going to be, it's never happening. But right. If the way through is to ignite a belief that things are possible, there is a way to go into the arena and come out the other side.
Yeah.
I think many people start to grab onto that and realize, okay, yes, it may feel like, wow, it's too late for this. But then suddenly, as soon as you go make something happen, it's like, oh, okay. So this is what the new beginning looks like, you know? And we get so caught up in words. I mean, here we are, two people who, you know, use words to make a living, so to speak. But I also invite people to really think about the words they use. Like, it's never going to happen for me. Okay, what did you just put out? What's the energy you just put out there? It's okay to have that feeling, but what if I don't believe it's ever going to happen for me, but I trust it could. Okay, now we just kind of switched, because if you start to trust it could, and it's hard because we're emotional beings. Let's just be honest there. But I'm curious for you, as this, you know, you're on the verge of your book coming out and giving it to the world and doing it for reasons to help, you know, somebody else have that belief and see in themselves. Is there anything you're afraid of that might happen because of this book?
Oh, sure. That's the writer's life, right? We're on the emotional roller coaster. It's like, you know, super exciting and all the great things, and then all the fears. Yeah, sure. I mean, You know, some of the fears relate to vitriol on the internet. Now, I'm not terribly afraid of that. I got some of that when I did a I had an essay go viral on today.com. It was called The Subaru Should Have Been a Sign. And it was one of their top viewed pieces. And, you know, I had lots of positive comments, and then some were just so ugly. And then I had to stop reading the comments because it was just terrible. Yep. And so, I mean, I'm sort of preparing myself for that to a certain degree, but I also know that those people who would say, you know, you're selfish, or, you know, why are you throwing your quote unquote lifestyle in our face, all of those ugly things, they're not my readers. They're not my audience. Mm-hmm. Those are not the people that I wrote my book for.
Right.
You know, I think about, some of the people who are in my story, who are in the book. And of course, you always hope that they're not going to be unhappy with you about certain things that might show up in the book. And I think where I'm coming to peace about that is I feel confident that I was in integrity as I wrote this book, and I did my best to write what was true for me, and to write it from a place of compassion and understanding for how other people may have acted at the time. You know, I think earlier on in the conversation, you sort of hinted at about, you know, how other people react when we come out, and sometimes, you know, of course, we all want people to embrace us with open arms, and that doesn't always happen. And what I've learned in my journey is that the other people in your life are also on a journey. You know, when you change, your relationship changes. And and I'm operating now from more of a place of compassion and understanding for some family members that may not have embraced my journey in the beginning.
And that's the thing of when you can see where this fits for our own healing, mm-hmm. and where it can help somebody else in their healing, then you feel pretty darn good about, okay, I'm glad I'm doing this. It's still not easy. Never going to say any of this is easy. You know, there's not any piece of this, and there's still moments. There's, I mean, as I'm, you know, I'm 60 years old, and as I'm thinking about my daughters, my oldest is getting married, and, you know, the potential of grandchildren around the corner, I'm like, okay, well, how's that going to work now? You know,
sure.
You know, how will my grandchildren view, you know, who grandpa was or is, you know, there's all these things, but the journey is they're going to be just fine because, look, I've raised two girls and they're fine. So I'm just going to keep doing. In fact, I had somebody say, and actually I recorded a video about this not long ago, like, how do you be a great gay parent? You just keep doing what you've been doing that makes you a great parent to begin with. The only thing that's changed is you happen to be gay. Now, yes, I realize there's layers of stuff that comes with it. I'm not going to be as flippant to go, get over it, you know?
Right.
But if you lean back into, okay, well, if you've been a good parent already, most of the work's already done. Now we're just going to have different conversations about what this new nuance of who you are fits into the picture. And of course, you know, there's always the other side of the fence too, depending on how a spouse decides they're going to be with this. Yes, there's those nuances that have to be addressed as well. But well, I'm so excited for you that this book is out into the world, taking wings and taking flight, and I wish you nothing but the best with it. And I appreciate you being part of my world and giving my audience yet another reminder that if you really want to truly live your life uncloseted, that the only way through is out. So thanks so much for Suzette. And if they want to get the book, I'm sure it's going to be everywhere, right? Any
it's
outlet that
everywhere that books are sold, awesome. Just put in Suzette Mullen, The Only Way Through Is Out. And yes. Absolutely.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for being part of Life Uncloseted and sharing your story with everyone. And I wish you nothing but the best as a fellow author for getting this out in the world. And yes, don't read the reviews. Just don't read them.
Yeah.
Unless you just want to have some laughs. I mean, sometimes they're like, hey, let's pour a glass of wine and like, let's watch what people have to say who really don't have anything better to do than write crappy reviews about something that they probably well, it either really affects them because they're hiding themselves and they don't want to admit it, or they're just not good human beings and this is how they show up in the world. So
yeah, absolutely. That's great advice. Thank you. I will try to remember that, Rick.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I'll even give you some wine recommendations to drink when you're doing that. Perfect. So, but anyway, thanks again so much, Suzette. I really appreciate you.
Thank you so much, Rick.
Hey, Life Uncloseted family. Another episode of Life Uncloseted has come to an end, and it is time for all of us to sashay away and go face our fears, make those bold moves, and stand up to living our life without apology. But before you do, I've got a favor to ask of you. Would you hop over to iTunes or Spotify or Podbean or wherever it is that you're listening to this and just give us a little bit of love if you like what we're doing here at Life Uncloseted? Here's what it does. It helps other people find the show. It helps other people get to know what we're all about. And you just might help change life. In fact, if you really want to change a life, we'd love it if you just ask a friend to take a listen and see what they think. So that's it. Love you all deeply. I'm Rick Clemons, the host of Life Uncloseted. And never stop stepping out, stepping up, and stepping in to living your life uncloseted.